Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Back with us this week is Albany County District Attorney David Soares. Welcome, David, or D.A. Soares. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you, Alan?
Well, okay, so let's talk about bail reform. Governor Kathy Hochul signaled in her State of the State address that she wants to give judges more discretion in setting bail. But many progressive Democrats don't want to tweak the law. I'm guessing you support the governor's proposal, and I wondered if you could sort of bring us all up to date on how this has all been unfolding.
If you're a business owner who's had to suffer the indignation of having recidivists come into your shop and harass your customers, like you're seeing in major thoroughfares throughout Albany County, if you are a person who doesn't feel safe walking in your own community, or if you're sick and tired of the violence, then you would be supporting Governor Hochul in her proposal to revisit the bail reform statute, specifically revisiting the language of least restrictive non-monetary condition. And to briefly explain that to you, Alan,
sure,
is that right now, if a person comes into your sandwich shop and is harassing you, what we call aggressive panhandling, and you reach out for the police will come, the police will remove that individual, but that individual will be right back on the street. If they come back to your shop the very following day, and this time they assault you, the police will come back and remove that individual, and that individual will not be released immediately, but will go before a judge, and that judge must apply the least restrictive non-monetary condition, which means they have to conduct an individual assessment of that individual's income, which you know will be non-existent, which means they will be released under the supervision of probation. Now, for that store owner, telephoning the police twice, having the police engaged in two separate activities, has brought no relief to that store owner. And that's what's happening on the retail side. On the community side, these reforms, and I'm not just talking about bail reform, I'm talking about bail reform, I'm talking about discovery reform and raise the age, has had a catastrophic effect in black and brown communities, which, by the way, our leaders promised. They promised that the impetus for passing these reforms was to, in fact, bring equity. It hasn't brought equity, and now we've had 3 years. 3 years under this existing condition. And there is not a hole that is deep enough that you can bury your head to continue to ignore what is happening in communities all across New York State. I know that this is happening in New York City, and it's happening in Albany. It's happening in Buffalo. My colleagues, we're waiting for people to come to their senses.
And when they do come to their senses, David Soares, what will their senses be saying?
Their senses is to reevaluate what they have done and to make the corrections, which I cannot say emphatically enough. Governor Hochul must be supported in the reforms that she has proposed in her State of the State and the tweaks that she continues to advocate for. She has to be supported.
So let's go specifically, sort of one by one, if you would be kind enough to do that, to tell us what those reforms will be.
The reforms should be this. No 16 or 17-year-old child should ever be permitted to carry a loaded firearm, be apprehended multiple times for carrying a loaded firearm, and continue to visit family court for counseling, crackers, and juice. That, to me, is such common sense that it shouldn't matter which side of the aisle. That's one of those areas that we should have universal, universal agreement, because the current law in New York State is if a child is apprehended with a loaded firearm, so long as that child does not display the firearm, then that child can go to family court and continue to receive family court treatment. And in Albany County, we have multiple defendants that continue to be apprehended by law enforcement, that continue to be returned home to their parents in the communities with the same existing conditions. That's one. Discovery. The fact that we have 35 days to provide every single shred of information in an ongoing case to defense counsel at the infancy stages of an investigation and case is baffling to me. It's simply baffling. And that's what has caused the massive turnover in terms of personnel in district attorneys' offices all throughout the state. We are losing advocates who advocate for victims in courts. That should be alarming to every citizen who believes and appreciates law and order and believes that individuals should be held accountable. And again, bail? Bail is absurd. It is the most absurd piece of legislation that has been passed since the Rockefeller drug laws. And I think we just need to pause and understand what it is that they have passed and how it's affecting every person in communities.
And how do you tweak the law?
You tweak the law by having people who apply the law actually in the room and provide expert consultation. I mean, there is not one area, right, in society that I've ever witnessed leaders going in and changing the law so radically without the input of experts. You wouldn't consider doing that with the environment. If a builder wants to build on wetlands, they would have to do an environmental impact study. Well, they've revamped the entire criminal justice system based on the words of advocates who don't like the fact that, you know, judges have to consider dangerousness. Advocates who use terms like criminal justice involved as opposed to criminals. This morning in Albany County, we arraigned the defendant who shot and murdered someone two blocks from the building that I'm situated in right now, the WAMC building, right? That's not a criminal justice involved individual. It's a person who's alleged to have committed murder. And once he's convicted, he will be a criminal. And I just, it's incomprehensible to me how we can continue to sit by, allow people to use certain terms, and those terms then manifest themselves into policies that just don't work. It's not a matter of Democrat, Republican right now. It is virtue versus pragmatism.
So specifically, day one, point one, what should we do?
Reach out to your local legislature, your local assembly person, your senator, and tell the senators, tell the assembly persons to support Governor Hochul in her effort to remove the least restrictive condition language from the bail statute. Also, secondly, urge your leaders to allow for possession of a loaded firearm by 16 and 17-year-old to be the triggering effect by which prosecutors can hold those individuals accountable and remove those individuals from community. The idea, again, that a 16-year-old, a 17-year-old can carry a loaded firearm, be apprehended by law enforcement, and they get to go to family court and walk back out on the street is just baffling to me. That's number two. Lastly, we want prosecutors to be spending more time investigating their cases. We want prosecutors to be interviewing victims and witnesses, providing care for victims, and less time chasing down the voluminous paperwork that is necessary to conduct and do within the infancy stages of a case. We have to revisit discovery. We have to put more resources into financing DA's offices throughout the state for discovery. But we need relief, and that relief needs to come in additional time to turn over the voluminous paperwork that we are currently providing, and that being the major source of those wonderful lawyers leaving the practice.
So, DA Soares, you are a district attorney, of course. You're a prosecutor. What do you need in order to make your job more effective?
We need technology. We need people. We need DAs. We need assistants. We need investigators. We need Criminal Justice Act advocates in the office so that we're providing the requisite level of service that victims of crime deserve. But I will add one more thing. Another thing that will help prosecutors, police, and public safety. How about more prevention strategies for young people who continue to have to survive in certain zip codes under the incredible cloud of violence that they're experiencing? Right now, we have young people who, for the first time, are being apprehended by law enforcement. 19-year-olds who've never so much as had a traffic ticket being apprehended for carrying guns. And the reason they're doing that is not because they're shooters, but because they don't feel safe in their own community. That's what's happening right now. These communities are transforming into the wild, wild west. And I am certainly not sitting here advocating for more police, more prosecutors. We have to, in equal measures, make sure that what we're doing effectively to support teachers, to support these young people who are living under the most violent of conditions right now in just about every single city in the state of New York.
And so if you were king, if you were emperor, what's the first thing you would do right now if you had unlimited power?
If I had unlimited power, what I would do right now, first and foremost, is that you have to have a system that can hold people accountable. We, as I'm sitting here right now, as a person who's been in office now for over two decades, I am telling you, the criminal justice system that we have right now is holding no one accountable because we cannot hold them accountable. That's the first thing. You have to have a system that is holding people accountable. The second thing is you have to look at the conditions that exist in the communities that continue to provide us with all of our business. It's amazing to me that after two decades, you have people just by virtue of being born in a certain zip code you're born in a certain zip code in the city of Albany, in a certain zip code all throughout New York State. You are condemned because of that zip code, because we do nothing to inject change in those communities. I've said this 20 years ago, and I know it's so cliche that you can't arrest and prosecute your way out of these conditions. That is so true. But, you know, the amount of money that governments, local governments, have had to invest just to build the infrastructure necessary to keep up with these reforms, a fraction of those dollars could have changed the fate of so many of those young people born in the zip codes that I'm speaking of right now, Alan. And I have to apologize. I may sound a little more amped up than I usually am. I don't think people are accustomed to this, but I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated, Alan. And I will gladly apologize to any legislature that I have offended if in exchange for that apology, they just do what is necessary and do what's right. And that is, we need to change the current laws to be able to hold those individuals who continue to destroy community accountable.
So let me go a little further with this. How much funding has the governor proposed for criminal justice? And more specifically, has Governor Hochul proposed giving your office more resources in the budget so that you can have real jurisdiction over the legislature and the governor?
Governor has proposed a budget that I believe our District Attorneys Association is very pleased with. Throughout the last several months, there's been a lot of engagement with the governor's office. I'm most impressed by the fact that her state of the state reflected that she's listened. We are having the most difficult time right now retaining experienced prosecutors. You need experienced prosecutors to try these very complex cases. And so she's promised more aid to prosecution. That is something that we are clearly in favor of.
Where are they going?
They're going to the state, ironically. Right. They're going to jobs because these are individuals that still want to do and still want to be involved in public service. And they love their work. They love their work. But they did sign up once they left school. That when they left law school, they did sign up to help, you know, victims of crime. What they didn't sign up for was to be clerks chasing paper, chasing body cams, chasing all of this material across technological spectrums that are incompatible. That's what's happening right now.
And so what do you need?
Again, we need those investments in discovery. We need those investments that help us retain people, as well as we need salaries that attract a new talent to two offices. What's happened over the course of the last several years, Alan, all we hear about is how terrible police work is, and all we hear about is just how terrible prosecutors are. Well, you know, you can only say that for so long, and until you start seeing the impact on recruitment. We have police officers, police departments that are down, my local police department, down 60-plus people. And when you are down by that much, you're putting additional strain and stress on your existing groups. We're seeing this happening in my own office, where whenever we lose someone, the work that that individual was carrying is then spread all across the rest of the employees who are there, which means more work for them. And when you have that kind of those kind of conditions, that's when mistakes start to happen. And so I've watched and been part of this of these discussions the last several years, and I am just asking for some sanity. I am asking for a timeout, sanity, take a deep breath. Let's see where we are. Where we are right now is chaos in the streets, retailers shutting their businesses down, leaving communities that they need to be in. I have banks that are in the inner city, and we all know the history of banking as it relates to black and brown communities, but I have banks that are being robbed almost weekly. And Alan, and in the state of New York, unless you're using a weapon or force, like if you walk in with a note and demand money and threaten force, when you're apprehended, you get to go see a judge, you get to be arraigned, and then you get to get an appearance ticket to come back. What message are we sending? What message are we sending to employees and those banks that are, in fact, demonstrating good community ethics by trying to diversify their services to communities that are marginalized?
So let's talk a little bit about the uptick in gun violence, which I understand is quite severe right now. Are we making any progress?
We're not making any progress because we have incompatible statutes right now. Let me give you an example. The governor, in response to Buffalo, came back, called for an emergency session. They all returned and, you know, they reevaluated the red flag laws and they passed a series of regulations that allow for prosecutors as well as a whole host of other people to have standing in a courtroom so that we can engage in bringing people to a court venue for ERPOs, right? And so that's good. If a child is threatening to shoot up a school, if you see someone who's threatening harm to themselves or another individual, you can come into a Supreme Court and file what's called an extreme risk protective order. A judge will conduct a hearing. And if you're successful, then you can go back into that person's home and remove a weapon from the home. That's extreme. But let me flip the coin for you. If you're 16 or 17 and you have a loaded firearm and you've been apprehended two times in possession of that loaded firearm, that's not considered extraordinary. One is extreme. The other is not extraordinary. That's where we are practicing law right now. So how can you look in the community of, let's say, West Hill, Arbor Hill, and the South End in the city of Albany, where the vast majority of my gun violence is emanating from, how can you combat gun violence in that environment?
Now, aren't illegal guns the real issue? Do buyback programs work? And is there any other method to get illegal guns off the street as well as illegal guns coming in from other states, which we know are horrendous?
I don't want to sound as if I'm a member of the governor's staff here, but I think she's going in the right direction, creating these crime analysis centers that exist. For example, the Capital Region Crime Analysis Center, there's been a significant investment in both technology and resources that enable an officer, once they remove a weapon from the community, they can go back to the station, test fire that gun, submit the results of that test fire, and that casing will be mapped and will be matched to see what other crimes and where that gun has been used before. In other words, what she's done is invested in resources that tell us how that gun has lived its life, which is significant. But again, it's about having the resources to hire people to fully staff the Crime Analysis Center as well as our New York State labs. So I think that we have in place the right technology. We have the right personnel. We can attract them and employ them. But we have laws that do not support our ability to remove people from community and hold them accountable.
David Soares, Tyre Nichols, and problems with the police and the justice system are at the top of a list I want to ask you about. Mm-hmm. Mr. Nichols, who was African-American, was beaten to death by officers. All of them are black. So isn't this a perfect example of the systematic racism and training problems in police departments across the country and in New York?
Well, let me answer that question for you. And let me answer that question as a person who's been involved in investigating cases of police brutality and a person who's also had the experience of holding police accountable for police misconduct. Tyre Nichols, there is nothing about that case that was about training. Let's be very clear. If you watch that tape, if you watch that video, what you saw were thugs and gangsters who happened to be wearing police uniforms engage in conduct that only criminals could possibly engage. There's no training for that. There's no school in the United States of America, no training academy that teaches people in uniform or people who assume this prestigious positions to engage in that behavior. From the body cams that you were able to observe and from some of the street cams and some of the business cams, what you saw were thugs that were intent on harming this young person and proceeded to go about engaging. There was not one bit of police training that could solve any of that because police don't behave like that.
And when we find a cop who is misbehaving, and we certainly have seen that over the years, what should be done?
Well, they should be held to account, like you're seeing immediately. In the case of Tyre Nichols, what you saw were, and by the way, there was also a lot of discussion around, well, the reason why these officers were quickly, you know, charged was because they were African-American. No. Before, in years past, when you didn't have the kind of technology that is everywhere, camera phones, body cams, business cams, city, municipal cams, before, it would take a lot of time to investigate that case. All you have to do is turn the Axon body cam on to see what occurred there, to see that there was not a single lawful police conduct there that one could attribute to training or a lack thereof. This was just a gang assault and execution.
So let's talk a little bit about alternative policing. Is there a plan in place in Albany County, for example, to go beyond traditional policing and employ mental health professionals for situations where armed officers can often make the situation worse?
Listen, I'm very glad that you asked that question. I want to be very clear about something here. Whenever you see one of these incidents take place in this country, whether it's in Missouri, Staten Island, or whether you see it happening in this instance in Memphis, the initial reaction is to paint every department with the same broad brush. I think people have to take stock and take inventory of what's happening in policing in their own community. Only then will you be able to make the proper recommendations and assess them truly for what they're doing. One of the things that I've been here for two decades, I've watched the transformation of the Albany Police Department. This is not the same department that I found. And, you know, all throughout the staffing shortages, throughout some of the challenges that they've experienced here with gun violence, again, I draw your attention to the events that have happened outside of your own radio station in the last month, where you had people shooting at one another from across the street, to a homicide. These are individuals that continue to respond to the most violent of offenses and yet still continue to respond and make referrals to LEAD, which is the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program. And you still have them, you know, making sure that individuals who don't need to be arrested but need psychological treatment, who need some kind of addiction treatment, are getting that treatment. The other reason, Alan, that we need to revisit these reforms is because this bail statute has decimated the alternative to incarceration programs that exist in every community. They've decimated them because the inconvenient truth is it's been law enforcement on the forefront of all of these mental health issues and some of these addiction issues. And in Albany County, what I can tell you is that we've eliminated the population in the Albany County jail from 100%, over 1,000 beds, to about 40%. The people who are currently in Albany County correctional facilities are people that have been sentenced or people that are awaiting to go to state prison. You have a clearance of about 60% of those beds that we have used as transition for people who've been arrested temporarily, held there, and then assessed for some kind of alternative to incarceration. Now we have no mechanism to do that. You give people an appearance ticket and hope that they come back to be assessed. That's not happening. So our drug court population have sunken, been reduced significantly. Mental health population has been reduced significantly. All of these specialty courts that we developed to divert people into have been substantially decimated by these reforms.
Let's talk a little bit about qualified immunity for police officers. You want to describe what that is and whether or not it's being abused?
I want you to think about something. Think about a police officer who is taking on a job, who is summoned to a location. Do you want that police officer going to that location and addressing the issue at hand? Or do you want that police officer sitting in his car thinking about whether or not he's going to be losing his house because the qualified immunity, the protection that allows for him to do what he does, has been removed from him? This is perhaps the greatest policy mistake. There are several things that I've heard that are just explosive terms that will have detrimental impact on maintaining public safety. One is defund the police. Two is coercive treatment, this idea that a drug court is coercive treatment. And three, eliminating qualified immunity. I can tell you right now that if we removed absolute immunity from prosecutors, you wouldn't have one person showing up to do that job. That's what you're asking for.
David, or D.A. Soares, we're out of time, and I do thank you for continuing to come on with me and speak to these issues. Thanks so much.
Appreciate you, sir.